You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
The Amen Stone by Yehuda Amichai. On my desk there is a stone with the word Amen on it, a triangular fragment of stone from a Jewish graveyard destroyed many generations ago. The other fragments, hundreds upon hundreds, were scattered helter-skelter, and a great yearning, a longing without end, fills them all. First name in search of family name, date of death seeks dead man's birthplace. Son's name wishes to locate name of father, date of birth seeks reunion with soul that wishes to rest in peace. And until they have found one another, they will not find a perfect rest. Only this stone lies calmly on my desk and says, Amen. But now the fragments are gathered up in loving kindness by a sad, good man. He cleanses them of every blemish, photographs them one by one, arranges them on the floor in the great hall, makes each gravestone whole again, one again, fragment to fragment, like the resurrection of the dead, a mosaic, a jigsaw puzzle, child's play.
At the Still Point of the Turning World by T.S. Eliot. At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards. At the still point, there the dance is. But neither arrest nor movement, and do not call it fixity, where past and future are gathered, neither movement from nor towards, neither ascent nor decline. Except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance.
A Cure of Souls by Denise Levertov. The pastor of grief and dreams guides his flock towards the next field with all his care. He has heard the bell tolling, but the sheep are hungry and need the grass today and every day. Beautiful his patience, his long shadow, the rippling sound of the flock moving along the valley.
He's Scott Winter.
And she's Stacy Waite.
Air Schooner is back from a July-August hiatus, and we're talking about spirituality and writing, and we were able to talk to poets Marilyn Nelson and Jericho Brown.
I got to talk to Jericho Brown a little bit about poetry and spiritual experience. Jericho Brown worked as the speechwriter for the mayor of New Orleans before receiving his PhD in creative writing from the University of Houston. The recipient of the Whiting Writers Award, the Bunting Fellowship from the Radcliffe Institute at Harvard University, and two Travels Fellowships from the Krakow Poetry Seminar in Poland, Brown teaches currently at Emory University. He also read to me a little bit from an essay called The Possibility of God from the book A God in the House, Poets Talk About Faith, and we're going to play you just a little bit of that essay.
I write because my writing mind is the only chance I have of becoming what the living dead are for me. I exist because I was impossible for someone else to be before me. I love the church now, and it scares me. I still listen to and seek out recordings of the preacher Carlton Pearson. I'm a lover of gospel music until the day I die. But to be honest, when friends invite me to church, I usually find an excuse not to go, because I'm afraid that someone behind the pulpit will at any moment attempt to erase or degrade my existence. It's not a comfortable feeling, not a feeling with which to enter a house of worship. The poem mirrors the life of the believer and mirrors the process of prayer, of having a conversation with the supernatural. For instance, line breaks have everything to do with doubt. That's why poetry is different from prose, because it is infused with doubt. At the moment of a line break, even if it's for a millisecond, you're thrust into doubt. You're thrust into a place where you're not certain what just happened or what's going to happen. Only faith that the next line will land us on solid ground is what keeps us breathing.
You know, Scott, Jericho and I had a lot of fun on this interview. We had a lot in common. We talked a lot about growing up queer and going to church and the sort of seemingly contradictory experience of doing that, of being in that environment. And Jericho talks about that experience as part of the impetus for the essay.
Part of the point that I'm trying to make in the essay, right, like part of what we believed when I was growing up came from a real experience. It wasn't made up. I don't think there was it wasn't just mass hysteria either. Yeah. You know, that was a real experience that I had and that people around me had while we were in those churches, listening to those songs and watching those preachers. I think this is what people don't understand. This is where people don't get it, right? At a given moment, somebody can say something about a queer person. Somebody can say something about a gay person. And everybody just keeps moving on like nothing just happened. And that's not just in church.
Yeah.
But it's definitely in church. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
People, you know, it's the people where the situations where something does happen, the situations where somebody stands up and says, hey, that was crazy. Why did you do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those situations are actually in our world the weird situations. You know, and it's interesting to me that people don't want to be honest about that.
Me and Jericho talked a lot about being queer and going to church and those sorts of things. And I guess there are two things I did in church. One was being queer in church. And then one time I tied my shoelaces together in church. So those are the two worst things I did in church. Anything, you ever do something bad in church, Scott?
I guess my dad grew up Jewish and my mom grew up Lutheran, and then they both left the church. But that basically left me to grow up Jewthern, which basically meant I didn't go to church. But when I did, I went to non-denominational church, which was still a powerful experience for me.
And for both poets we're talking to today, it's not just religion or church that's a powerful experience, but the poems themselves become a kind of spiritual experience. And Jericho is going to tell us just a little bit about that.
Part of what we're interested in when we read a poem is an experience, you know, and you can call that experience intellectual or emotional or whatever it is you want to call it. Any way you look at it, when you read a poem, you're looking to come out of it different from the way you went into it, right? You want some form of transcendence to happen. By the time you get to the end of that poem, you want to be different. And that desire in people seems to me a spiritual desire. And I think people have to be, we have to start to be honest about what we're trying to do when we write our poems.
Listening to Jericho there almost makes me nervous. He's got some really big expectations for what a poem is able to do. I don't know if my poems live up to it, but it sounds amazing.
Yeah. Poet Marilyn Nelson also has high expectations of poetry to provide that meaningful experience that Jericho Brown's talking about. Marilyn Nelson's a poet who grew up as a military kid, moving from base to base. She earned degrees from UC Davis, University of Pennsylvania, and got her PhD at the University of Minnesota. She's the author of many poetry books, appears in all kinds of anthologies, and she's won all kinds of awards, from the Lenore Marshall Poetry Prize to the National Book Award. Since 1978, she has taught at the University of Connecticut Storrs, where she's a professor of English.
Nelson talked with AIR Schooner correspondent Adrian Kesters about how poets position themselves in the world, and this also ends up for Nelson to be a kind of spiritual question.
My impression has been that for the last, 50, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
Poets have been moving into a kind of we're better than you are world. I've been involved in exchanges in which other poets say, we don't want to be popular. We don't want to be read.
Right.
We don't want to be read by people who don't have a college education. That's beneath us. I mean, I haven't actually heard anybody say that's beneath us. But the other part of it I have, heard and read. We're not writing for you. We're writing for each other. And for some highfalutin future university textbook or something. I don't know.
For the anthology, writing for the anthology.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say that we are who we are in the world. And the world we're in is also a political world. But everything is connected. And the decision you make about what you eat is connected to the world and to the environment and to the economy. Every decision you make is. You have to weigh everything. And I was just actually this morning thinking, well, maybe I should try to write a poem about what I think about when life begins. I don't know when life begins. People out there fighting about it. It's like they know.
Right. Yeah.
I think I'll write a poem about what I think.
I totally understand what Nelson's talking about there in terms of having that thought, like, maybe I should write a poem about this or that. And I remember in Richard Hugo's book, Triggering Town, he's like, whenever you have that thought, don't do it. Don't write the poem.
Wow. I'm not sure I need another reason not to do great stuff right now, but we'll deal with that later. At the end of Adrian Kester's interview with Marilyn Nelson, she finally prods Nelson into sharing a poem of her choice with us, and that poem is called Cautious Wishing, and we want to share it with you now.
Say you've trapped an elk or caught a magic fish. Beware of greed, ambition, and desire. When it offers you anything your heart can wish, just free it, because wishes can backfire. If you wish every meal will be a sumptuous feast, you could wind up having to diet to lose weight. If you wish unwisely, in anger, or in haste, you just might destroy every good thing you create. We're all living with side effects unforeseen by the science that wished us forward toward new frontiers. The 13-year-olds who wished they were 19 are too soon 50, lamenting the passing years. And the girl who wished her golden retriever could talk has to listen to his detailed monologue about peas and poops he encounters on every walk, because a talking dog is still a dog.
Special thanks to Air Schooner's Adrian Kesters for doing that interview, and let's finish with one more spirituality poem.
Spring Song by Lucille Clifton. The green of Jesus is breaking the ground, and the sweet smell of delicious Jesus is opening the house. And the dance of Jesus' music has hold of the air, and the world is turning in the body of Jesus, and the future is possible.
Now you can find all of Adrian Kester's half-hour interview with Marilyn Nelson on our website at prairieschooner.unl.edu. She talks about neoformalism, Emmett Till, and her current work.
And you can also hear my full interview with Jericho Brown, where we talk not only about spiritual experience and poetry, but we also talk about gay marriage and about one of the best albums of all time, Prince's Purple Rain.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from James Redd, Ted Wheeler, and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.